and welcome to I Choose the Road podcast. If you heard episode 5, our episode about NFATs, you will have heard Tarina talking about the 2026 land grab and the Restoring the Records campaign. I thought this was a subject worth looking into a bit more, so I have invited Phil Wadey onto the show. Phil Wadey is co-author of Rights of Way, Restoring the Records, and also the Access and Bridleways Officer for the British Horse Society. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you. Hi, Amy.
So, Phil, tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm Phil Wadey. I've been a volunteer access and rights of way person for the British Horse Society since too many years ago, probably 30 years now. Originally, I was just covering South Hertfordshire. And then gradually over time, I ended up with a national role, which is as historic research advisor to the staff at Stoneleigh, and giving advice to other access and bridleways officers across the country. Mm-hmm. I'm also chairman of the Open Spaces Society, which means I'm interested in commons and greens and things as well as linear rights of way. But that's the background.
I didn't know that about the Open Spaces Society. What? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, the Open Space Society really, I mean, it does look after paths as well, but I always think of it more for the commons and greens because nobody else looks after those. And with commons, there are public rights of way on foot, simply because somebody had the right to pick up acorns once for their pigs, or some other common right. And some commons carry rights of way on horseback, which is why I got interested in them in the first place. And then village greens, town and village greens, carry rights of way not in a motor vehicle, but other sorts of rights of way for lawful sports and pastimes for people who live sort of in the locality of the green. So they're very important local access rights for people.
So it sounds like in general, you're a person who accessing as much as of our rights to this land as possible is very important to.
Yes. I got into this because when I was about 16 or 17, I was riding my pony after school. And there was a notice on a bridleway we used that said the landowner had applied to close it. And I wrote into the council saying this would be awful because then we would have to use a horrible piece of road and we wouldn't be able to bypass it. And the lady from the British Horse Society, who was our county access officer at the time, she spotted my letter in the council papers when they were discussing it. And promptly came along and visited and said, well, if he sends letters like this to the council without any training or anything, then we'd like to recruit him as a volunteer, please. And I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, it's really a life's work.
I generally only do things for the public. I don't really do things for landowners unless there's mutual benefit, because I've got that sort of background. You know, I'm a mathematician. I did a law degree because it was looked interesting and fun in my spare time with the Open University, and I just like to do things because I think otherwise the public generally have their rights taken away from them because they didn't know to do something at the right time.
Yeah,
and I think that's wrong. So you have to do what you can to help.
Absolutely, and that's what this is all about. So tell us about what's the significance of 2026. What does that mean to us?
Well, on the 1st of January 2026, at the end of the 1st of January, so we'll all have a bank holiday that's perfectly normal and use our rights of way as normal. But at the end of the day, any unrecorded footpaths and bridleways, which as a matter of law existed before 1950, whether or not they're written down, if they're not recorded, they will stop existing. So the landowner whose land they cross will be entitled to put up barriers immediately afterwards and say, no, that's been stopped up by law. Second point is that if a route is really a route that could be used by horse-drawn vehicles or even motorised vehicles, but it's accidentally on the official map of rights of way, known as the definitive map, as a footpath or bridleway, it will have its rights stopped up to only those shown on the map. So it's really important to know that any routes you're using are properly on the map in case you lose them. So ordinary roads outside, they don't get stopped up. Mm-hmm. But if the road past your house was accidentally written down as a footpath, then it would become a footpath and you'd lose the right to take your car past it.
Oh, so, okay. So if something was a bridleway, but it was registered as a footpath, then you would lose the right to take horses up it.
Yes, exactly that.
Okay. So it's pretty massive. So you were talking about lower status and higher status paths. Is that what you mean by that?
Generally, we took lower status paths. They're still paths, but lower status means used by fewer sorts of users. So the hierarchy is footpath for people on foot only, bridleway for people on foot, on horse, leading a horse, and on bicycle,
mm-hmm.
1668. Restricted byway, which includes all of those plus horse-drawn vehicles.
Right.
And byway open to all traffic, which is literally all traffic that can make use of it, but which is mainly used at the point it was recorded for walking or riding for the purposes of footpath or bridleway. And then of course, ordinary roads, which have the same rights as byways open to all traffic, but they're mainly used by traffic, you know, motor traffic or something. So they don't get recorded on the official map.
So tell me about the definitive maps. What are they and when did they start?
Okay, well, the definitive map is actually the definitive map and statement, because there's a map plus a written record that goes with it. They're held by the county council in two-tier authority areas, or by the unitary authority in single-tier local government areas in England and Wales. So none of this applies to Scotland or Northern Ireland, England and Wales only. And in 1949, the government, or Parliament, enacted the National Parks and Access to the Countryside Act. And that set up a system requiring every county council or unitary authority to create a definitive map. It had to go through various stages of, you know, a draft, go out and survey the paths, write them down, that's the draft map, open it for public objection. And at the end of that, they created a provisional map. And then at that stage, only the landowners could object. Mm-hmm. And the ones that made it through that stage went on the definitive map. And why it's really important is that if something is shown on the definitive map, that is conclusive proof in law that you have a right to be there, to pass and repass on that right of way. So if you were showing today a restricted byway, they didn't exist in 1949, but they do now. If you're showing a restricted byway, that is your conclusive proof that you can take a horse-drawn carriage, vehicle, cart, any of these variants along it, and nobody can stop you. That's your right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important. But back in 1950 or 1949, the law said that it's proof of your rights without prejudice to the rights that are not recorded. So if it accidentally somebody had written down something was a footpath, but historically people had been riding it or using it in a horse-drawn carriage, then it didn't lose the higher rights. It just meant the footpath rights were proven. And if there was a dispute later about higher rights, you'd have to go and prove them then. Yeah. And now what 2026 does it says, no, you've had 75 years to record paths. And if you haven't done it yet, they probably don't exist. So we're going to stop them up.
So what? So if there was a path that was a historic path, but what didn't get put on that map in 1949, you've still got the chance to prove it now, even if it's not, yes, not on the path at all. But after 2026, that's it.
Yeah, we still got four and a bit years left.
So what did land rights and access rights look like before that 1949 point?
Well, the common law has recognised footpaths and bridleways, you know, for hundreds of years. It's just the normal system of highways was footpaths, bridleways and carriageways. Carriageways are what we'd call roads today. And none of them were written down. Sometimes councils who had, you know, the parish council who used to be responsible for the highways in the parish, they might have their own records, but these would be hundreds of years old and are often lost. And then later on, the Parliament made districts, collections of parishes, and they would have a district highway surveyor to look after the paths and to make sure they were kept in repair and kept open. And again, they kept their own records. It wasn't a statutory scheme. So they kept their own records. And often, you know, if a large landowner became chairman of the parish council or the district council, they'd quietly lose some paths that were inconvenient. And so really over years, lots of rights of way have been lost simply because they weren't written on the right piece of paper on the right day.
Right.
And we've got now is our last chance to record any old ones that need recording, plus any ones that are in use, but used to exist, and so they would still be deleted if they're not recorded. You know, the fact that they're in use every day today doesn't save them. It's only if it's on the map.
On the map, right, okay. So your sort of, you know, your book and your website and everything is a bit of a campaign to get people to get involved in this, isn't it, in saving the paths. So what, practically, what is it that you're asking people to do and helping people to do?
Okay, so I think the first thing everyone needs to have a go at is anyone who walks, rides, cycles, carriage drives, you need to check with your council that the routes you use are recorded properly. So that's really important, because finding ones that are not recorded properly means you've definitely got some work to do to make sure your ones are saved.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of councils have their definitive map either on the website or a version of it on the website, something that you can look at. A few authorities are not yet on the web, surprisingly, these days. And you have to go to the council office to have a look at it. And this, of course, has been extra difficult during COVID, so because a lot of offices have been closed. So we're very much hoping that people will go and go to their county council or unitary authority website, type in definitive map or rights of way map and see what comes up. If nothing comes up, then it's a phone call or an email to say, where can I see the definitive map, please?
Right. And that's what it's called, the definitive map.
The definitive map of rights of way is the official title.
Okay.
And I forgot to mention earlier that it doesn't apply in the old central London, the old county council, London County Council area, the 12 inner boroughs. Okay. They don't have a definitive map either. But otherwise, across England and Wales, everywhere should have a definitive map.
Why don't they have one in London then?
I think it was just thought to be too built up at the time, right, to be worth doing. So it was just omitted. And in fact, initially, lots of city boroughs and things had an exemption. If they looked as though they were quite built up, they were let off the duty. But then that exemption lapsed, and so all areas apart from inner London should now have a map.
So does that mean people in inner London have got less rights or more?
It shouldn't affect what rights they have. It's just that they're not written down.
Okay.
And if they're not written, or they might be written down differently, but they're not written on a definitive map, which okay. means people in a London can't rely on the simple fact of it being on the definitive map as conclusive proof. You see, if somebody says, get off my land, but you know your path is on the definitive map, then if they were to take you to court to say, this person keeps coming on my land and I want an injunction, simply showing the definitive map is sufficient to be conclusive proof, and the court can't look into it. It's told what the answer is.
Mm-hmm.
There are procedures for taking rights off the definitive map, but while it's on the definitive map, it's conclusive proof,
mm-hmm.
whether it's right, that you have the right to be there and to use the route.
So it's checking that your often used paths are on the map. And what about if people finding like things that they think should be paths, like gated or little used paths, and they need to, and checking them?
It's particularly important that little used paths are saved, because otherwise they'll just stop existing. Mm-hmm. And you won't even have a public outcry on the day that they're blocked, you know, which would help with an often used path. So what's important here is it's all about evidence. To get a path recorded is all about the evidence that it's a path.
Right.
So if we find people who remember it being used, as an alternative to the map evidence that the book goes through, it might also be that older people in the community remember, oh, well, we always used to go that way in our cart or on a horseback or even on foot to get to such and such, to the shops or to the river or to wherever they were going. And if that was a public right, rather than because they knew the landowner or had permission, then that would be good evidence. So statements from older people remembering little used paths that they used to use, they're really good. So if we can get those written down, that helps, written down and signed. And the other thing is the old maps, of course. So old maps that show routes that existed. So this is more for your horse-drawn carriage routes.
Mm-hmm.
Not many footpaths are on old maps, unless you're very lucky and it's a local map. But on the bigger maps, generally they'll be made for the travelling public. So they would show, you know, people wouldn't have wanted to walk hundreds of miles, or, you know, 30 miles to get somewhere in a day particularly, but they might have done that on horseback. And if they're carrying goods, that might have been in a horse-drawn carriage or something, cart. So those routes might be on maps sold to the travelling public. So we find those, for example, in Hertfordshire, we've got Drury and Andrew's map of 1766 or Bryant's map of 1822 are really good for giving us an indication where the routes are. They weren't as good at making maps in 1766, so the alignment is a bit off sometimes, but the fact of a route joining two villages, that would generally be quite good. It would definitely join the right villages, that's what I mean, if it didn't have the accuracy we'd expect today. So that sort of map. And then, of course, there's things like tithes. There's a tithe redemption map for a lot of parishes in the country. And they would often show routes, because they would be public. They might not have had a tithe attached to them, so they would be shown differently on the map. They're worth looking at. Or in the 1800s, there was a big land grab by landowners with the enclosure movement. And a lot of common lands were enclosed and the public was kicked off them. And as part of that process, they sometimes set out bridleways or footpaths or new roads. And that's really good evidence if you can come across an enclosure map that sets a route out.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about the enclosures, actually, Phil, and wondered what happened at that point with paths. Were they, you know, if somebody was, like, if a landowner was grabbing some more land via the enclosures, but there was already a right of way over it, would they be obliged to keep that, or would they have chosen whether to do that, or would they maybe go, this is my land now, but you can cross it? What happened around that time?
Okay, so every area did their thing a little bit differently.
Okay.
There were acts of parliament that said how it was to work, but then the implementation would have been a local matter. So in some areas, they stopped up all existing rights, and only the ones written down in the enclosure award, which goes with the map, existed after the date of the enclosure. In other areas, they said which ones they were stopping up and which ones they were creating, but ones that weren't mentioned at all just carried on.
Right.
And I suppose in the third class of area, they only dealt with the land and didn't really change the rights of way very much at all. So there's the whole range of what might have happened.
Okay. Did happen. So any paths that were lost back at that time are unrecoverable now?
If they were in an area that stopped up everything and only set out new paths, then they're lost.
Uh-huh.
If you're in an area where they said exactly what they were changing, they're creating these new ones, getting rid of those old ones, then if there was something that wasn't mentioned, that might still exist.
Okay.
Because the basic law, the common law for highways, is once a highway, always a highway. And what that means is that if you can show a route was a bridleway or a carriageway at some point in the past, then it must have a proper legal stopping up to make it stop being a highway.
Right.
Highway is a general term for footpaths, bridleways, the road outside, all sorts of rights of way.
What about green lanes?
Very controversial.
Oh.
Because he knows what it means. A lot of green lanes are clearly a descriptive term for what's a carriageway, but it just was never metalled. When they started tarring roads or stoning roads, it never got around to it. Perhaps it's the... Mm-hmm. wasn't used quite so much, or, you know, there might have been equivalent routes and the parish only wanted to spend money on one of them, because once it had made one of them stoned or tarmacked, then the traffic would naturally move to that. So often Green Lane would be the one that still had the grass growing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Although my road where I am at the moment, the road outside has got grass growing in the middle because the council doesn't get enough use for the council to for the tarmac to stop the vegetation coming through now.
But
that's what happens. Nature takes over. So green lanes, you know, descriptive, it might be a very good indication that there's evidence to be found, but just knowing it's called Green Lane on its own won't be enough. You need some evidence to go with that.
I mean, part of the reason I ask is because I do know of a couple of traveller sites which are on what I would think of as a green lane. So, you know, traffic doesn't go up and down it, but people have got their vehicles parked on either side with room for something to pass. So is it, if people are living places like that, is it worthwhile them checking that their rights to park there and their vehicles are still going to be relevant after 2026?
Yes. So the legislation does have one saving that's important. If you own land and the only way of getting to it is along a route that gets stopped up by the 2026 rule, the landowner will then have an easement to get there as a private right.
Mm-hmm.
But that only goes to the landowner and his people there with his permission. So if you were just on the side of a wide road, and some of the enclosure roads were, you know, upwards of 30 foot to 60 foot wide, because they were old droving routes or something where people would need to take sheep or something, and they would occasionally be very wide where they needed to stop overnight, and that would mostly be grass. So you do get some very wide routes. If the whole route is public at the moment, it's not very much help to people who would park on the verge if the adjoining landowner suddenly says, but that's now mine because the rights have been stopped up. The fact that he's got an easement doesn't help the travelling person. So it is very important to make sure that the full width of the route is properly recorded if you want to maintain those rights after 2026.
So the width as well. Right, so what we're saying is for people to check that their often used paths are recorded, and for people looking if they discover what something they think might be a right of way or a little used path to go and check that. Or, I mean, I saw the other day, I was saying to you, a path that I went last year. I was looking for mushrooms in a certain field and I was climbing over this gate, but it was a footpath sign. And this year, the gate was completely grown over and the footpath sign was a bit sort of, so things like that, we need to be double checking. And then also asking older members of the community what routes they remember and double checking for those. So once you've done that and you've identified some paths, what do you do then? What is the process?
So once you've got a few paths to look at, then you need to look at the evidence. And there's two ways of doing this. Some people won't feel confident going off to the archives and getting out the right maps. So for those paths, I think it's what I would recommend. If they're equestrian paths, I would say tell the British Horse Society, because BHS has got a network of volunteers across the country all doing this sort of work at the moment, who've been going off to training, finding out how to do it. So if anyone's in doubt, I would recommend seeing if the BHS can help, because they probably just need to be told about the route and what evidence, if you've got statements of older people, or you say, but we use this currently, but it's not on the map, telling the BHS, and then they can find the evidence, and help with the application. If there isn't a local BHS volunteer, there might be one in the open spaces, or there might be one in the Ramblers. Ramblers aren't just doing footpaths, they're interested in other routes too. Because if it's an old road, or supposing it's an old bridleway, that's not recorded, at the moment, walkers would be allowed to use it, but if they don't record it, they lose as well, because the walkers won't be able to use it either. So all the user groups are trying to work together to get everything recorded, because it's such a big job. So I'd say, anyone who's not desperate to get into the archives, make sure you've told enough people about this route and ask if somebody else can pick it up. But for those that are interested, the County Record Office, usually at County Hall. I was at Hertford yesterday to look at some documents in Hertfordshire for Hertfordshire paths. And when I got home, I applied for a bridleway to be upgraded to restricted byway to make sure that horse-drawn carriages could get through. So I was quite pleased with that one. I finally got the last piece of evidence I'd been waiting for, because it takes time to go to the archives. But usually at County Hall or the equivalent for unitary authorities, they'll have a County Record Office. It might go under different names. In Hertfordshire, it's the Hertfordshire Archives and Local Studies Centre. If you're searching to find out what the archives are called, you might need to try different words, see what comes up. But in the old days, they were all called the County Record Office. And they will have a lot of documents. So they will often have tithes and enclosures. And one document I'm particularly keen on is the Inland Revenue Valuation Maps of about 1910. And this is because in 1910, the government decided not only was it going to tax everyone for on income and things, but they would tax you on the rise in value in your property because somebody had, built a new street or something, or there's a new school, so your property gets worth more because it's near amenities or something. So we'll charge people money for that, they decided. Anyway, that government was out at the next election, so it never happened. But the Inland Revenue did go round valuing everybody's land across the whole of the UK because they needed a baseline to see what the increase was measured against.
Okay.
When they did that process, they gave you discount if you had a footpath or bridleway across your land, because that would lower the value of your land. You couldn't just go and develop it because there was a right of way in the way. So it must be worth a bit less. So their records show if the landowner claimed the discount, of course, because they didn't always, mm-hmm. Would show that they'd taken a discount for a footpath or a bridleway. And for roads, they get 100% discount. They just left them as no value. Okay. And on the maps for the Inland Revenue, they used to colour in the different land holdings in different colours, and they would often leave the roads as white roads. They would not be coloured in at all. So we talk about white roads, and that's really good evidence of a carriageway, a route that you could take a traveller's vehicle along, for example, mm-hmm. because it was, you know, full tax exemption. And the Inland Revenue doesn't like people, you know, not declaring their taxes. Mm-hmm. In those days, the penalty for giving incorrect information when they did the valuation was up to 6 months of hard labour. So we take the maps as being pretty good evidence of what they show. And if somebody did claim a discount and their family don't say that their uncle went to prison or whatever afterwards, then we take it as true.
And I suppose for those landowners with their potentially quite sort of greedy ethos, there's a financial incentive for them to be honest about those rights of way, isn't there? Because then they've got to pay less taxes.
Absolutely. But of course, sometimes they would think, well, not many people use this one. Maybe I'll get away with it. So if they didn't claim a discount, that doesn't work against us.
Right, it's okay. Just...
So if they claim a discount, then that's good evidence of a right of way. If they don't claim anything, it's just quiet. It's silent. Mm-hmm. It doesn't against there being a right of way.
So we've identified a path that we want to check. We look at the definitive maps and see if it's on it. And if it's not on it, and then we can either tell the Horse Society, tell the Ramblers, or we can go and look for these evidence. What you were telling me earlier about the enclosures maps and these different documents that you can find that evidence on.
Yes. And then when you've collected enough evidence, and it's very difficult to know what is enough. So generally, in our book, we put a star rating against different sorts of evidence, and we say, well, try and get above 7. Although most of them, if you're for carriageways, routes for carriages, generally, if you get above 7, you'll easily get above 10 or 15 or something, because all the documents will be saying there was a right. But generally, I say if you can get above 7 stars worth of evidence, so and that's always from at least 2 documents. So you've got some corroboration. It's not just one piece of paper. Uh-huh. It's always. Then we can make an application. And the application, you can get the forms from the local council. They have to be the right form. You can't just write a letter saying, I think this needs recording, because the council doesn't have to deal with that. But if you fill in the right form, and it is a very simple form, it just says mm-hmm. who you are, but what change you're looking for on the definitive maps. You want to add the restricted byway from here to there, or the bridleway from this village to that village, and you draw it on a map. It has to be a good enough scale map. So the explorer maps from the Ordnance Survey are the right sort of size. Land Ranger are not good enough. So 1 to 25,000. So you draw it on the plan with a red line or something, and you have to list the pieces of evidence you're sending. Attach those to the form, send it to the council. Now, I always ask the council to confirm that the application is in good order. So not necessarily it'll be successful, but confirm that it meets the statutory requirements for being an application. I ask them to confirm that because they can check it. when they receive it and tell you it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Government promised back in 2000, when they brought in this legislation for 2026, they promised that any applications that had been made before the cutoff but hadn't been processed yet would keep their rights, so they wouldn't be lost until it was all processed.
Right, so they would honour any process that had started.
Yes, that's right. Now, that's not yet in legislation. We've been promised that as a statutory instrument, to a secondary legislation to supplement the Act, but that hasn't come out yet. But they're still committed to honouring the promise.
Right. So, Phil, how many paths have you saved over all these years that you've been doing this?
Well, I did go and have a count up. And from making applications, I've saved 63 so far.
Mm-hmm.
So fully completed and on the map. I've got about just over 300 applications waiting to be processed.
Wow.
And this is mostly Hertfordshire, I do. A few in Norfolk and a few in Hampshire. But so most of mine are in Hertfordshire or just on the borders, you know, just popping out into the adjacent counties. So yeah, 63. Sometimes they're done quickly and sometimes they take years. And it really depends, you know, every area is different. Some counties are very much on top of the workload mm-hmm. and process within the year. So the statute says they should deal with it within a year. But other counties, because they didn't allocate enough resource years ago, they sort of built up a backlog and everything is taking a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now, because of the cutoff day legislation, they're getting more applications than ever before, just at the time that local government hasn't got enough money for anything. So it's
but as long as those applications are in, then at least that they're going to be considered.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so are you aware of a lot of people across the country also putting in these applications? I mean, you've personally saved 63, but I imagine you're supporting the applications of a lot more than that.
Yes, of course. So my co-author, she has also made over 300 applications. She's uh-huh. in some.
She's in Somerset.
Yeah. One of the things we started doing for the British Horse Society and for the other user groups was giving training on how to look at the evidence and how to interpret maps. And when Sarah and I visited Cornwall, we did 2 days of training in Cornwall,
mm-hmm.
in a Sunday. And most of the council officers came to that training. And at the end of the second day, they said they thought they had about 5,000 paths in their county that needed applications, which is an astonishing number. And so, you know, it really just goes to show there's a lot of work to be done. Some counties are very good, like Berkshire. They don't have so many. Most of theirs are recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteers there tell me. So it does depend where you are as to how good it is and how much work needs doing, but plenty to be done.
So in Cornwall, can those council people do that themselves, or do they need members of the public to put in those applications, or can they just crack on with doing that work?
Well, they can crack on with, they can investigate paths and make orders to add them to the map. But because there's so many, it really needs applications to save them so they can be processed after 26. Mm-hmm. That's the catch. There's just not enough time and staff to do it. So it really needs volunteers to put in applications. Now, your application doesn't have to be perfect. It only has to put in enough evidence to get it on the register of applications, because you could always supplement it after 2026 with more evidence. The main thing is to say, this is a path. Here is at least some evidence to show that it's a path, to get it on the register, a proper application then with the evidence. And then you can always add more evidence later. But the first thing is to get it on the register so it's not extinguished in 2026.
Yeah. So that this is partly why you've written this book. You've co-authored this book. And what's the name of your co-author?
That's Sarah Bucks.
And you've done this to give people a guide for how to go about that process.
Yes. So Sarah and I were both volunteers for the British Horse Society. And we found that lots of people were ringing up for advice. And we were always saying the same things.
Yeah.
So we thought, actually, why don't we get it written down? And then people can read the book or get it from their library. So a lot of library services have bought copies.
Oh, okay.
So if people go to their library and ask for rights of way restoring the record, they should be able to get it in most of England and Wales anyway. And some libraries will order it for you if they haven't got it yet, if there's enough interest. And then people can read that and see how to do it, or if they're stuck on some point. And what we've done is written each chapter about a different document or different sort of document. And we've said where you can find it, what sort of words to type into search engines, or what to ask for when you get to an archive to get the right. And then we've given examples for every document type. We've given an example of how that would be used in an application and how you would point out the value of the document to the assessor. You can't assume that all the people assessing the applications actually know what they're doing, because they might have only been appointed last week. Or some councils get their councillors to make the decision, and they're not generally as good as permanent staff who would, you know, build up a lot of experience. You might have councillors only just been voted in and don't really understand how it works yet. So it's always best to take your time to explain it in your application really easily, so that I don't wish to disparage councillors, but you know, you write it so that even a simpleton could understand. And I don't mean any disrespect to anyone, but you don't know who the assessor is.
Yeah, so whether they're going to have experience or not.
Yeah, indeed.
So there's obviously, Phil, like you just said, there's so much to do. There's so much to do.
Yeah.
And your support for that is your book and also these courses, which you will sometimes do.
Yes.
So tell me, why is it important?
Well, it's important because otherwise these rights will be lost. So we think of, you know, if there's an urban alleyway that people walk down to get to the shops, and then that gets stopped up because it wasn't written down, people can extend their gardens to take it into their garden. Mm-hmm. And then you that way anymore. Or you've got a field that you've always crossed to get to some significant place, like to a ford or where you'd water your horses or something. Mm-hmm. And if it's not recorded, they can lock the gates. And once they're allowed to do that, that's it. Your route is lost forever. So it's really about protecting the public's rights. Now the government, when they brought in the Act in 2000, the Countryside and Rights of Way Act 2000, brought in this cutoff. They said at the time, well, you've all had plenty of time to record your paths, so we'll give you another 25 years and then it'll be too late. And they said that there would be help, and they said they would put money into it, and there would be pilot schemes to show how easy it was. But the pilot schemes failed because it's not easy. Or it's not easy to do centrally. Mm-hmm. It really is local knowledge and local people doing some things. So the knowledge of where people have always taken their horse-drawn vehicles is key to making sure that travellers' rights are not lost here. And so I just encourage everyone to do that, because otherwise, you know, travellers are not the most popular at times in some communities. And the last thing anyone wants is to have perfectly legal rights taken away at a time when everything has to be argued. Much better to get it on the definitive map and then it's protected forever.
Protected, yeah. Oh, Phil, do you know what? It's been absolutely fascinating chatting to you today and learning about this in more detail. And I also just really want to say thank you so much for all the work that you've done, because like you say, this is so important. It's so important to everyone. It's important to travelers, but it's important to everyone because we have so little right already to this, to the land on these islands. And it's absolutely vital that we just grab hold of what we have got and don't let that be gone as well. So thank you ever so much.
You're very welcome. And I'd say good luck to anyone who decides to get started.
If you're interested in getting involved in saving our rights of way, even if there's just one path you want to check, Phil and Sarah's book is available on their website, www.restoringtherecord.co.uk. There is also information on here regarding the training courses they run. As Phil mentioned, the Ramblers Association are also mounting a campaign called Don't Lose Your Way to save as many paths as possible. And they may well be able to help if you've ever identified a path that needs saving. There's lots of information available on their website, www.ramblers.org.uk. If you are enjoying I Choose the Road podcast, please do like us on social media and leave us a review and subscribe on whatever platform you listen to us on. And do share it with anyone you feel would be interested in or affected by any of the issues raised on the show. If they're a person who doesn't really know what a podcast is, then tell them and show them how easy it is to listen. Let's get the message out there, folks. Thanks again to Phil Wadey for sharing all this vital information with us. And thanks, as always, to J Terrestrial and Firepit Collective for the music. In the next episode, we'll be hearing from Bristol Defendant Solidarity about all the work they are doing with those facing charges from the Kill the Bill demos in March 2021. See you next time.
My convictions are strong and my vision is true. I have felt to no man and I'm not near to you. I choose the road, not for me, a life for being born to be sold. The green hills in the distance are calling me home. Not for me, a life of being born to be sold under the open sky.